from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. As chief counsel to the White House in the aftermath of 9/11, Alberto Gonzalez began a dialogue with his legal counterparts in the Pentagon, the Justice Department, and the Department of State. The goal was to find where America drew the line on the treatment of detainees, to define the boundary of torture, and assess the reach of the Geneva Conventions in an age of terrorism. In his confirmation hearing today before the Senate Judiciary Committee as President Bush's nominee for U.S. Attorney General, Alberto Gonzalez was accused of leading the United States to cross that line. Tonight on Point, torture, the tape from today's hearings, and the nomination of Alberto Gonzalez to the highest law enforcement role in the land. Senate Democrats were expected to hit Alberto Gonzalez with tough questions on his role in redefining torture in the context of America's war on terrorist groups. Senator Patrick Leahy, Democrat of Vermont, wasted no time. Here, Senator Leahy asks Gonzalez if he agrees with a 2002 memo that was prepared for him by the Department of Justice, which came up with a narrow interpretation of a federal torture statute.
This is actually the memo here. It's a fairly lengthy memo, but addressed a memorandum for Alberto Gonzalez, counsel to the president. And it says, for an act to violate the torture statute, it must be equivalent in intensity to the pain accompanying serious physical injury, such as organ failure, impairment of bodily function, or even death. In August 2002, did you agree with that conclusion?
Senator, in connection with that opinion, I did my job as counsel to the president to ask the question.
No, I just want to know, did you agree? I mean, we could spend an hour with that answer, but I'm trying to keep it very simple. Did you agree with that interpretation of the torture statute back in August 2002?
If I may, sir, let me try to. I'm going to give you a very quick answer, but I'd like to put a little bit of context. There, obviously, we were interpreting a statute that had never been reviewed in the courts, a statute drafted by Congress. We were trying to the interpretation of a standard by Congress. There was a discussion between the White House and the Department of Justice, as well as other agencies, about what does this statute mean. It was very, very difficult. I don't recall today whether or not I was in agreement with all of the analysis, but I don't have a disagreement with the conclusions then reached by the department. Ultimately, it is the responsibility of the department to tell us what the law means, Senator.
Then do you agree today that for an act to violate the torture statute, it must be equivalent in intensity to the pain accompanying serious physical injury, such as organ failure, impairment of bodily function, or even death?
I do not, Senator. That does not represent the position of the executive branch. As you know...
Let him finish his answer.
But it was the position in 2002.
And so it went today. Democratic Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont there, in an exchange with the nominee for Attorney General, Alberto Gonzalez, this morning in the opening round of his Senate confirmation hearing. Mr. Gonzalez spent morning and afternoon sessions before the Senate Judiciary Committee. He will appear again tomorrow. His confirmation by the Republican-led Senate is thought to be secure, but his grilling was tough. Joining me now from Washington is Jeffrey Smith, who covered the first day of the Gonzalez hearings for The Washington Post. Jeffrey Smith, thanks for being with us tonight.
You're very welcome. First day and last day, I should note. The questions were ordered to be submitted for the record, but there's no indication there are going to be additional hearings.
I see. So that is it. We thought earlier that there would be more, but today was it.
So it seems, at the moment anyway.
We just heard Senator Patrick Leahy's one of his questions, and there were a number of very tough ones to Alberto Gonzalez today. But how would you describe the hearing overall today, the tenor of the interaction with the senators and the White House counsel, Gonzalez?
Predictable. The questioning from the Republicans was uniformly warm, with one exception, and that's from Lindsey Graham, who is a former Judge Advocate General in the Air Force, I believe. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure, but I believe the Air Force, and who feels, like many members of that profession, that this administration has made serious mistakes in its conduct of the war and its conduct of interrogations and its setting of interrogation policies. Senator Graham asked some very interesting and very tough questions, and the Democrats asked some very tough questions, but the Republicans have a majority on the committee, and I don't think there's much doubt that Mr. Gonzalez will be confirmed.
What was the general thrust of the Democrats' questions, and what was the general thrust of the Republican embrace?
The Republican embrace is easier to deal with. It was just that the administration's policy has been miscast or misunderstood or not fully understood, and that there are, of course, grievous threats to American security out there, and that the administration must do everything it can to defend them off and defend us, and that the laws at stake offer the administration the kind of flexibility that it sought. The Democrats generally and specifically questioned that idea and asked Mr. Gonzalez to justify his involvement in decision-making on various memoranda that have come into controversy. And in one case, the so-called torture memo approved in August 2002 has been discredited by the administration itself.
When you say discredited, what exactly do you mean? That they produced it at the time or stood by it at the time and now they've moved away from it?
Yes. A week ago, on the eve of this hearing, not literally on the eve, but a few days before this hearing, they formally repudiated that in another document issued in the same manner by the same office at the Justice Department, formally repudiated the legal reasoning of the previous memo. Now, they did this they said that all of the provisions of the first memo were withdrawn, with one exception, and it's that exception that dominated the questioning today. They said the first memo said that the president had the authority under extraordinary circumstances and in a time of war to authorize torture, despite the fact that U.S. and international law prohibit torture under all circumstances, and they seem to do so quite plainly and without much dispute. There is an argument that the administration embraced in August 2002. The presidential powers are inherently large enough to authorize ignoring those laws, both international and domestic. Now, they said that was perhaps the most criticized part of the first memo. And in this memo, this new one issued a week ago,
yes,
they said that we simply don't want to address that issue, where there's no need to address it because we're not going to engage in torture. This president has already decided there won't be torture, and so therefore the issue of presidential authority to order torture is simply not relevant at the moment. So that left people who really disliked the first memo unhappy because it wasn't a full withdrawal of the first memo's provisions.
And there have been recent allegations that torture has continued to go on or very rough treatment of prisoners in any case.
Yes, although Mr. Gonzalez thinks that some of those reports may be incorrect, he said today. In any event, the Democrats tried repeatedly to get Mr. Gonzalez to say, do you support the idea that the president has the authority to commit torture? And he just refused to be pinned down on that subject. He sidestepped it.
Alberto Gonzalez has a very long relationship with this president. Remind us, if you would, Jeffrey Smith, how far back it goes and what the Republicans and many Democrats, it seemed today, find compelling about his personal story.
He met President Bush in 1994 at a fundraising event when Bush was running for governor of Texas. And after his election, Governor Bush appointed Mr. Gonzalez his personal counsel in Texas. He served in that job until 1998 when he was made Secretary of State in Texas by President Bush. And then a year later, he was appointed to the Texas Supreme Court by President Bush. He served in that role for only a year before he became White House counsel under President Bush. So they've worked directly together for about 9 years, and every year except the year he was Supreme Court Justice in Texas.
Mr. Gonzalez, 49 now, one of eight children of Mexican immigrants who scarcely spoke English, ended up going to Harvard Law School. It's been a long rise from very humble origins.
Yes. We've been told repeatedly that his rags-to-riches achievements were one of the things that attracted him to made him attractive to Bush.
And Jeffrey Smith, what's the expectation of Democrat votes on this nominee for Attorney General?
It's really up in the air. I think there are a few Democrats who remain unhappy with his testimony today. Senator Leahy, at the end of the hearing, issued a statement just a few minutes ago saying that he was not satisfied by all of Mr. Gonzalez's answers. But whether that will translate into a vote against is another matter. Judge Gonzalez, as he's called, is a very personable man and generally goes out of his way to avoid antagonizing people. He doesn't have an abrasive personal style. There is also a kind of a leeway that confirming committees give to presidential appointments. I mean, the idea being that the president has the right to appoint someone he likes, he wants to work with. I think it would probably take something else to push, you know, a significant number of Democrats into no vote category. But we'll see. We don't know.
And when will that vote likely take place by the Senate?
Apparently, under their standard committee rules, the record must remain open for a week after a hearing such as this to allow for written questions to be submitted to Judge Gonzalez and to be received by from him and reviewed by the senators. And I think that means that a vote could take place any time after that.
Jeffrey Smith, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Glad to help you.
Jeffrey Smith with The Washington Post. He covered the Senate Judiciary's committee's hearings in Washington today on the nomination of Alberto Gonzalez to be U.S. Attorney General. Joining me now from Washington is David Rifkin. He served in a number of positions in the Reagan and first Bush administrations, including the White House Counsel's Office and the Department of Justice. He's a member of the United Nations Subcommission on the Promotion and Protection of Human Rights and a partner with the law firm Baker & Hostetler. David Rifkin, thanks for being with us tonight.
Nice to be with you.
And with me from New York is Mark Danner, staff writer for The New Yorker magazine, author of the new book Torture and Truth, America, Abu Ghraib, and the War on Terror. Mark Danner, welcome to On Point.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Also with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point news analyst Jack Beattie, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly magazine. Jack, good to have you tonight.
Hello, Tom. Hello to our guest.
Mark Danner, you laid down a pretty tough marker this morning in an op-ed piece in the New York Times saying that if Alberto Gonzalez is confirmed as Attorney General, then all Americans are in some sense party to torture. Have I made it too tough, what you're saying?
No, I think that is what I said. I was trying to make the simple point that during the last 3 years, the policy of the United States on torture and the activities of the United States in torturing have changed dramatically, and that the first high-level official who was certainly very much involved in that, who served as the point man in the White House for changing these policies, is now up before the Senate to be confirmed as the chief law enforcement official of the United States. And we have a fairly extensive, though certainly not complete, record of how Judge Gonzalez was involved in shifting United States policy on interrogations. And my point was that, among other things, his confirmation will mark an acceptance by the broader government and, in effect, by the American people of this change in policy concerning interrogation and treatment of prisoners.
David Rifkin, let me put that to you in the minute before the break here. Do you see the nomination proceedings, the vote on Alberto Gonzalez, as a kind of referendum on torture?
Not at all. And, of course, if you assume, as I think the previous commentator has assumed,
Mark Danner.
Yeah, as Mark has, forgive me, that Judge Gonzalez has authorized torture. The fact that he is going to be confirmed, and I'm quite certain of that, would indeed be, in a way, a stain on our corporate and national psyche. But that assumption is completely unwarranted. I think it, frankly, is ludicrous. The level of legal and moral absolutism that the critics are bringing to bear, in some sense, is far more questionable and far more difficult to support for a serious lawyer than the difference between the definition of torture in the August 2002 memo and December 30th, 2004 memo. So I hope we're going to get into it a little bit, but I just don't accept the premise. It's sort of like saying, well, if you confirm somebody without much objection who used to beat his wife, you were legalizing and sanctioning wife beating. But
we'll look at exactly that and hear a lot of tape. Jack Beattie, two very different views of the man and the world since 9/11 emerging in these hearings today.
Yes, and we won't get more. This was it today, as we just learned.
Listeners, you can join our conversation. We're talking tonight about today's Senate confirmation hearings on Alberto Gonzalez as Attorney General of the United States and the issue of torture. Did you listen today? What did you hear? Is the U.S. Senate about to confirm a man who endorsed torture? Or is that word being used to embarrass Alberto Gonzalez and the president? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about today's Senate confirmation hearings on Alberto Gonzalez as Attorney General of the United States and the issue of torture. You can join the conversation tonight. Is the U.S. Senate about to confirm a man who condoned torture? Or is the word torture being used to embarrass Judge Gonzalez, currently White House counsel, and President Bush? Are you voting up or down on Alberto Gonzalez? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's hear a bit more from Senator Patrick Leahy, who was probably the toughest questioner today, though there were some others tough as well, and we'll hear from Republicans too. But here he goes after Alberto Gonzalez. Excuse me. Oh, here it is. About his accountability and whether the so-called torture memos that Gonzalez either composed or approved can help explain the abuse of prisoners that has occurred at Abu Ghraib and elsewhere.
Well, do you think there's any connection whatsoever between the policies which actually you helped to formulate regarding the treatment and interrogation of prisoners, policies that were sent out, Department of Defense and elsewhere, and the widespread abuses that have occurred? Do you acknowledge any accountability for such things? Any connection,
Senator? As I said in my remarks, I categorically condemn the conduct that we see reflected in these pictures at Abu Ghraib. I would refer you to the 8 completed investigations of what happened at Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo, and there are still 3 ongoing. I'm talking about the Tagabu report, the Faye Jerns Kerr report, the Schlesinger report, the Navy IG, the Army IG, Jacoby, Ryder, Miller, all of these reports. And if you listen to the press briefings given in connection with the rollout of these reports, they do conclude that with respect to the conduct not reflected in the photos, not the conduct that we find the most offensive, but conduct related to pure interrogations, that there was some confusion.
The same reports you talk about say the Department of Defense relied on the memo. It's quoted extensively in the DOD working group report on interrogations. That report has never been repudiated. So apparently they did rely on their memo. On the memo, and when we find out about the abuses, we never find out from the administration. We find out because the press reports them. Is there any accountability here anywhere? As I mentioned earlier, my son was in the military. He was held to very, very strict standards. He's trained for combat, held to very, very strict standards. The vast majority of the men and women in the military are held to those same strict standards. I'm just trying to find out where the accountability is for this terrible blot that you and I both agree is a terrible blot on the United States.
I believe that is a very good question, Senator, and that is why we have these 8 completed investigations and these 3 pending investigations, and why we've had 4 hearings involving the Secretary of Defense. You've had 18 hearings involving the Deputy Secretary, Undersecretary of Defense. You've had over 40 briefings with the Congress, because we care very much about finding out what happened and holding people accountable.
Alberto Gonzalez responding today in hearings before the Senate Judiciary Committee under questioning there by Senator Patrick Leahy, Democrat of Vermont. And we're hearing very different interpretations of his role as White House counsel tonight. Mark Danner, let me come first to you. There are different views here. You hear David Rifkin saying it's the height of legal and moral absolutism of the opponents of Alberto Gonzalez to bind him to the notion that he condoned torture. I want to hear from both of you on this, but I wish you'd map out first. What do you see? What's happened here? What's your map of this world?
Look, you know, you have to separate, I think, here matters of opinion from the matters of fact. I think it's lovely that Alberto Gonzalez cited all of these reports, but the reports, in fact, show a number of things. They show the abuse was systemic. That is the word used by the Taguba report, systemic. They show that it happened not just on the night shift, as Alberto Gonzalez claimed today. They show that it amounted and what constituted torture on many, many, many occasions. And this was not just some people having a good time at night. without being properly supervised, which he also said today. If he cited those reports, if that's taken to be an indication that he has read them, and they are widely available, they're in my book, Torture and Truth. They're all included in this book, the text of those reports. The reports found, as a matter of fact, something completely diametrically opposed to what he said. And these are government reports and reports undertaken by general officers of the United States military, and they are confirmed by a leaked report from last February, from the Red Cross, which is empowered by law to visit these prisons, and by other leaked documents from the Red Cross this past summer.
But the issue is whether the trail
persists.
But isn't the issue whether the trail comes back to the White House counsel's office, to Alberto Gonzalez?
And as Senator Leahy said, you know, the idea, you're not going to get a picture of Alberto Gonzalez walking into Abu Ghraib torturing somebody. The question is whether within his capacity as White House counsel, insofar as he dealt with issues of interrogation, whether he, within that sphere of activity, did things that led in a policy way to a relaxation of standards of what the American military and American intelligence could do with prisoners. And the answer to that question is yes, and the reports have found that to be the case. So it seems to be the height of hypocrisy for Alberto Gonzalez to cite those reports while denying they said what they in fact did say. And also the height of hypocrisy to say that he first of all advised, and indeed his advice was accepted, that the Geneva Convention should not be applied to these prisoners. Secondly, he solicited an opinion from the Office of Legal Counsel of the Department of Justice, which essentially redefined what torture means.
Right.
The United States is obligated not to torture by international and domestic law. They redefined torture to constitute such severe abuse akin to organ failure or death that procedures taken around the world to be torture, like waterboarding, which is widely used in Argentina and Uruguay during the Dirty War.
This is the sort of taking people to the brink of drowning.
Exactly. These procedures were redefined as, well, that's not torture. Why? Because we say it's not. Now, this definition finally last week was finally withdrawn. But we know that these definitions had an effect on what the executive branch and what the military did.
All right. Mark Tanner, hold it there. I want to get David Rifkin in here. David Rifkin, are you saying that something else went on? I mean, the facts of the abuse, the torture, seem undisputed at this point. They're in many government reports. Where do you disagree with this picture, then?
This is a complex matrix, both as to the facts and the law. And the critics are, I think, at most charitably, inadvertently, less charitably, deliberately, are painting it with a broad brush. What do I mean by that? Clearly, some abuses have occurred. Torture has occurred. Lesser level abuses have occurred. Some murders have occurred. And it's interesting. The critics are basically saying, particularly the Democrats, my gosh, clean-cut, all-American fighting men and women wouldn't have done that if not for those memos. Leaving aside the fact that the particular memos were known to a very small circle of people in the executive branch, were never read by the likes of Sergeant Grainer. Leaving that aside, does it matter at all that, unfortunately, there's torture, abuse, rape, sodomy, killings going on in every civilian penitentiary, federal or state, and overseas? Because no matter how hard you try to inculcate the discipline, whenever you put, and this is, I'm not advocating not prosecuting those things. I'm not advocating not trying to have ever stronger rules against it. But I'm saying, as a matter of human reality, every time you put one set of people in dominion over another, you go back to Mesopotamia, ancient Egypt, you are going to have some abuses.
But hasn't the United States military been steadfastly opposed to that for basically forever? Hasn't it been explicit?
Of course, but let me also tell you, a simple military keeps data on abuses against prisoners, against civilians, going back to Mexican-American War. The Schlesinger Report actually points out, I don't recall the page, but I'm sure your listeners can look it up, that on a percentage basis, there have been fewer abuses against prisoners, against civilians, on a battlefield in detention facilities than during Vietnam, World War I, World War II, and Korean War. And by the way, to clarify, I'm not talking about abuses by the bad guys. I'm talking about abuses by our forces. So our track record is better.
But has the country ever walked away from the Geneva Convention and the definition of torture widely understood there before this?
First of all, there's a lot of confusion that seems to be taking place here. What's primarily relevant here is not the Geneva Convention, but the Convention Against Torture, which was signed and ratified by the United States. Reasonable people can disagree about what level of severity. And by the way, the word severe is in both convention and the Senate ratification of a document. So everybody agrees. I don't know many serious lawyers who don't agree that the word severe must mean something. So there's some level of pain and suffering that are not torture. We should have a serious national debate about what kind of coercive methods, in my opinion, by the way, not including waterboarding, but what kind of coercive methods, including perhaps some sleep deprivation, some sensory deprivation like playing live music, some use of stress positions. We are comfortable as a country using, as a matter of policy and as a matter of law, against people who are not POWs, who are not entitled to POW protections. The problem with the critics is they explicitly and implicitly assume that everything short of this gold standard, which is the POW standard, which is you cannot molest them in any way, all they have to tell you is rank, file, serial number, and their name. Anything short of that is torture. The ICRC says, and I'm not kidding, ICRC says that mere pressure, psychological pressure to get people to reveal information is tantamount to torture. That is absurd.
David Rifkin, I think we've got that, and yet this was a lot more than mere pressure going on. I want to keep the voice of today's hearings in here. Mark Danner, I'll come to you straight after this. Let's hear for just a moment from Senator Joseph Biden, Democrat of Delaware, here talking about Gonzalez's memos on torture, including a memo written by the State Department coming to him.
Your judgment was not as good as the judgment of the Secretary of State. Your judgment was not as good or as sound as the chief lawyer from the JAG. Your judgment was not as sound. And the question I want to debate about is the judgment. How did you arrive at this? Different than these serious people like you who thought what you were doing, recommending to the president in the various memos, was jeopardizing the security of American troops. And that's what I want to get back to. But I want to explain to the public and anybody, listen, this is not about your integrity. This is not a witch hunt. This is about your judgment. That's all we're trying to do. And so when I get to ask my questions, I hope you'll be candid about it. Because, not that it's relevant, I like you. I like you. You are real. You're the real deal.
Senator Biden, your red light is on.
My red light is on. Thank you.
Judge Gonzalez, while Senator Biden is awaiting round two to formulate a question, I think you ought to be given an opportunity to respond to Senator Biden's observations and implicit, perhaps, two dozen questions. So the floor is yours.
Senator Biden, I'm not. When you're referring to the Powell memo, I'm not sure which memo you're referring to, and I presume you're referring.
I'll give you a copy of it. It's, just so, for the record, Mr. Chairman, it's dated January 11, 2002, to John Yeo from William Taft, legal advisor, and there is overwhelming evidence that you saw it. There was discussion about it, and that's what I'm referring to.
There was a great deal of debate within the administration, as that memo partly reflects, about what was legally required and perhaps a policy judgment to be made by the president. And the fact that there was disagreement about something so significant, I think, should not be surprising to anyone.
Of course not.
And reasonable people can differ.
Senator Joseph Biden, you heard also Senator Arlen Specter there and Alberto Gonzalez. Mark Danner, this seems to go to the issue of the debate within the government over these changes that were made, and I'm sorry I didn't give a full run-up to that, but he's referring there, Senator Biden, to opposition to this memo from Secretary of State Colin Powell and also from lawyers within the U.S. military. Can you give us that story, Mark?
Yes. Well, the opposition from Colin Powell came with a decision to withhold Geneva Convention protection from prisoners taken in Afghanistan, both Taliban and al-Qaeda. And by the way, the notion that this had nothing to do with what was actually done on the ground is quite ridiculous. In fact, even within the Fay report itself and the Schlesinger report, it is said explicitly that procedures that were used in Afghanistan and Guantanamo, which were used on prisoners who did not enjoy Geneva Convention protection, then migrated to Iraq, where prisoners did enjoy Geneva Convention protection. Mm-hmm. And that is one of the reasons for abuses in Abu Ghraib, that they did things that were allowed in Afghanistan and Guantanamo and not allowed in Iraq, which itself is an explicit statement that these policy decisions had a very direct role on what was done on the ground in the interrogation rooms. You know, much of what Mr. Rifkin just said left me rather shocked. I don't know if he hasn't read the record or hasn't read the report or what, but the notion that Charles Grainer was somehow affected because – or not affected because he didn't read these reports. This is the guy, the notorious guy on the ground in Abu Ghraib.
At the end of the line, more or less.
A number of abuses. Is ridiculous. Of course, Charles Grainer didn't read the reports. What happened was that the reports and the memos, which changed policy, were converted into procedures that were permitted in the interrogation rooms in Guantanamo, in Bagram Air Base, and other places in Afghanistan, and finally in Abu Ghraib. Now, that is a matter of record. There's nothing in dispute about that.
I would like to comment.
One moment, David Rifkin, if you would. I want to bring Jack Beattie in here for a moment. Jack, I can see we're not going to get agreement there, but you're listening on. What do you see in these two realities and in what we're hearing today in the testimony, Jack?
Well, what I'm struck with is the Senator Biden's comment that that these issues go to Mr. Gonzalez's judgment, not his integrity. And yet, if you look at his past with Mr. Bush and his present, it seems to me there are questions to be raised about his integrity. When he was Mr. Bush's counsel in Texas, he tailored the memos he sent to Mr. Bush in such a way that he minimized Bush's moral responsibility for executing about 150 people. He repeatedly failed to apprise the governor of crucial issues in these cases, as Alan Burlow pointed out in the Atlantic Monthly.
That's prisoners on death row.
That's right. Ineffective counsel, conflict of interest, mitigating, even actual evidence of innocence.
But on the torture front.
And on retardation. He kept those things out. Now, on the torture thing, what does he do? The president, just as in Texas, the president wanted to be tough on crime. Now he wants to be tough on terrorism. And what does Mr. Gonzalez do? Well, he gives him memos that say, tailors the law so that he can be tough on terrorism, so we can have not torture. What should one say?
Torture.
Pressure, so we can have coercion, so we can do things that officially we have never done before. And you know, a headline: Attorney General is against torture. Who would have thought that that would be sort of the baseline here? That would be what we're looking for in our public officials. So I think the question of this man's legal judgment and his integrity on matters of human cruelty are very much to the fore here.
And yet, the understanding on all sides is that this nomination will go ahead; that it will be approved by the Senate.
Well, the Republicans have the vote, and they don't seem to be bothered by this. And, of course, the electorate reelected Mr. Bush, and this was one of the issues, or it should have been at least, in the election.
There's a lot more we're going to hear. Mark Danner, David Rifkin, please stand by. We're talking about today's Senate confirmation hearings on Alberto Gonzalez as Attorney General. You can join the conversation. Did you listen? What did you hear? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about today's Senate confirmation hearings on Alberto Gonzalez as Attorney General of the United States and the issue of torture. We're joined tonight by Mark Danner, staff writer for The New Yorker magazine, author of the new book Torture and Truth, America, Abu Ghraib, and the War on Terror. From Washington, by David Rifkin, served in the Reagan and Bush 1 administrations. He's now a private attorney in Washington. Our own Jack Beattie is with us. You can join us as well. Did you listen? What did you hear? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Republicans were asking questions as well today. One of them, very critical, Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, saying that even though he would vote to approve Alberto Gonzalez's nomination, he's very critical of the White House counsel's role in the drafting of the so-called torture memos.
The Department of Justice memo that we're all talking about now was, in my opinion, Judge Gonzalez, not a little bit wrong, but entirely wrong in its focus, because it excluded another body of law called the Uniform Code of Military Justice. And, Mr. Chairman, I have asked since October for memos from the working group by Judge Advocate General representatives that commented on this Department of Justice policy, and I have yet to get those memos. I have read those memos. They're classified for some bizarre reason. But generally speaking, those memos talk about that if you go down the road suggested, you're making a U-turn as a nation, that you're going to lose the moral high ground, but more importantly, that some of the techniques and legal reasoning being employed into what torture is, which is an honest thing to talk about. It's okay to ask for legal advice. You should ask for legal advice. But this legal memo, I think, put our troops at jeopardy because the Uniform Code of Military Justice specifically makes it a crime for a member of our uniformed forces to abuse a detainee. It is a specific article of the Uniform Code of Military Justice for a purpose, because we want to show our troops, not just in words but in deeds, that you have an obligation to follow the law. And I would like for you to comment if you could. And I would like you to reject, if you would, the reasoning in that memo when it came time to give a torturous view of torture. Will you be willing to do that here today?
Senator, there is a lot to respond to in your statement. I would respectfully disagree with your statement that we're becoming more like our enemy. We are nothing like our enemy, Senator. While we are struggling mightily trying to find out what happened in Abu Ghraib, they are beheading people like Danny Pearl and Nick Berg. We are nothing like our enemy.
Can I suggest to you that I didn't say that we are like our enemy, that the worst thing we did when you compare it to Saddam Hussein was a good day there, but we're not like who we want to be and who we have been. And that's the point I'm trying to make, that when you start looking at torture statutes and you look at ways around the spirit of the law, that you're losing the moral high ground. And that was the counsel from the Secretary of State's office, that once you start down this road, that it's very hard to come back. So I do believe we have lost our way. And my challenge to you as a leader of this nation is to help us find our way without giving up our obligation and right to fight our enemy.
South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham there in an exchange with Alberto Gonzalez. David Rifkin, very tough from the Republican side, from a senator who was a judge advocate general in the U.S. military, saying that the policy changes made while Alberto Gonzalez was White House counsel have made the U.S. lose the moral high ground, put U.S. troops in jeopardy, put this nation on a U-turn in terms of its morals, looked for ways around the spirit of law. This is about as harsh a critique as you can get and still come up with a yes vote.
It is a harsh critique, and I think this is a discussion we should have as a country. But let me point out a couple of things. At least Senator Graham, whose sincerity and passion is quite obvious here, is not commingling what we all agree abuses, the pyramid stacking, the sexual molestation, unlike some of our critics, including some of my colleagues today. He's talking about coercive interrogation techniques, which are apples and oranges.
Such as?
Well, like putting people in stress positions, which is basically, you know, telling somebody you stand at attention, and undoubtedly it's a very uncomfortable situation.
Or in Guantanamo, shackled to the floor in fetal position for 24 hours or more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, I would submit to you that this is a very slippery slope indeed. These are very tough, very painful issues because, let's forget the law for a second. As a matter of law, if we had more time, we can have a serious debate about the differences between a POW treatment and the treatment that is supposed to be accorded to unlawful combatants. Let's see, what are we comfortable with as a nation? I personally am not comfortable with waterboarding. I'm personally not comfortable with many things we've done. The problem of the critics, I don't know where Senator Graham fits in this equation, is they're not comfortable with anything. I repeat, if we're going to give everybody POW treatment, which, by the way, POWs are honorable people fighting for their country, had a misfortune because of a reversal on a battlefield to fall in the enemy hands. They're treated better than criminal defendants. You cannot ask them any questions.
You cannot interrogate them at all.
You cannot interrogate them at all. By the way, your listeners should understand that. You can't even keep them. I don't know how many of them are old enough to remember Hogan's. Have you ever wondered why they're all congregating in the barracks together? You cannot even put them in secure jail cells. So are we supposed to have a situation where all of Al-Qaeda members have been captured and Taliban members, one big happy family playing soccer together?
Clearly, this is not the era of Hogan's heroes. Mark Danner, how about it at that fundamental level?
saying.
Well, you know, I hear this, and I think, what exactly is he talking about? What exactly is he talking about?
I mean,
what you just heard is a senator from a former military lawyer, a Republican from South Carolina, talking about what is actually happening. And as you pointed out in your last question, Tom, before the break, the military is very upset about this. The judge advocates general came up secretly and saw a human rights activist in New York to try to get word out more than a year ago. There's enormous dissent and dissatisfaction within the military, who presumably are not thought by Mr. Rifkin to want to have a Hogan's Heroes jail in Guantanamo. There's enormous dissent and anger about what's been done within the military. The 12 people who've come out publicly, retired admirals and generals, include a former chairman of the Joint Chiefs, a former Marine general who had
CENTCOM,
Joseph Hoare. And, you know, let me give an example of, you know, this notion of, gee, you have to treat them this way. You know, what we're talking about is not even really abuse. It's ridiculous. Here's an FBI counterterrorism official was over the summer in Guantanamo. So this is after the images and the scandal about Abu Ghraib, well after it.
Yep.
And he wrote a note to his chief, an email, saying what he saw. This is in August. I entered interview rooms to find a detainees chained hand and foot in a fetal position on the floor with no chair, food, or water. Most times they had urinated or defecated on themselves and had been left there for 18 to 24 hours or more. On one occasion, the air conditioning had been turned down so far and the temperature was so cold in the room, the barefooted detainee was shaking with cold. When I asked the MPs what was going on, I was told that interrogators from the day prior had ordered this treatment and the detainee was not to be moved. On another occasion, the air conditioning had been turned off, making the temperature in the unventilated room well over 100 degrees.
Martina, we've read that, and who can't shrink from that? But let me ask you, David Rifkin says, if you put a full POW mantle over these prisoners, you can't interrogate them at all. Do you agree with that? Mark Danner, please.
In every previous conflict, we have had POW mantle, as you put it, over prisoners. And the United States military has a code of military justice and also a handbook for interrogation that they have used for years and years and years. They are professional interrogators. And the notion, the military itself does not believe, you know, so far as I can tell, the judge advocates general, the people who know about this, does not believe that this kind of activity, not only does not believe that it's necessary, they think it's detrimental to good order and discipline and that it's wrong. They reject it. These are things that have been imposed on them by the civilians in our government, including the civilians in the Department of Justice and in the White House, and the civilians at the top level of the Defense Department.
Including, I guess we'd have to say, Arbella Gonzalez. Mark Danner, David Rifkin, stand by. I want to finally get to our callers here. Paul is calling from Cleveland, Ohio. Hi, Paul. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. First of all, I'd like to say we need more Republicans like Senator Graham. I like Jack.
Absolutely.
I like Jack Beatty's last comment to be loud and clear. It should have been an issue in the last election. It should have been a loud issue in the last election. I'd like to say that the Gonzalez at the hearings and Mr. Rifkin are doing denial and diversion and I can't even pronounce the word obfuscation of the issues. Bush is acknowledging his support for everything that Gonzalez has done in Bush's name and in his intent. Gonzalez was a loyal servant, served in the Bush team, and did what was needed, which was pushing the line as far as can possibly be pushed or imagined, even illegally, of this question of torture and abuse.
So you're giving a thumbs down on this nomination, Paul?
No, not the nomination. The nomination will go through. The most important thing we're hearing is Mr. Bush is acknowledging his support for Mr. Gonzalez, his one of his team.
May I just make one?
Paul, thank you for calling. David Rifkin.
Very simple factual observation. The previous wars Mark is talking about did not involve wars against al-Qaeda and Taliban, who are unlawful combatants whose preferred combat technique is to kill civilians, which is the biggest violation of international humanitarian law.
Let's pick it up right there. Mark Danner, how about that?
Well, that's true, although, you know, I would point out that we extended Geneva Convention and POW protection to, for example, the Viet Cong in the Vietnam War. This was an irregular force, an insurgency, guerrilla force, which did very much kill civilians and assassinate civilians.
Viet Cong looked like Boy Scouts compared to al-Qaeda. Okay.
That's quite that is quite true, and I'm not saying that these people should not be interrogated and that procedures should not be adopted.
But they cannot be. Forgive me, Mark. POWs, they cannot be. It would be a violation of the law. I'll be the first one to admit that. You cannot interrogate POWs.
I think we've got that point. I don't want, and we understand it. I don't want to get stuck right there. Mark Danner, a question here. Mr.
Guns, can I just say something?
Yes, please.
Let me just make one point, which is Mr. Rifkin a moment ago said, well, we have to think about these various procedures. You know, he said, I am personally not comfortable with waterboarding. And I would say to you that waterboarding is against the law. This is, you know, domestic, not only the international undertaking on torture, but the domestic law that it's its counterpart forbids torture. And there just is no way to define waterboarding.
On that front, then, Alberto Gonzalez said today, Mark, if I may, Mr. Gonzalez said that many questions about torture were, his word, hypothetical, because, quoting him, the president has said we're not going to engage in torture.
Well, you know, this is a very, you know, this is a great trick, and we know exactly what it is. What you do is say, okay, we're not going to do torture, and then you define all the things that the rest of the world, including torturers in Latin America and everywhere else, define as their main torture techniques, and you say, well, actually, since that doesn't impose pain equivalent to organ failure or death, it's not torture. We just, you know, so therefore, the president is absolutely free, as is Mr. Gonzalez, to say, no, of course, I condemn torture wholeheartedly. But on the other hand, waterboarding isn't included in that definition, even though the rest of the world would agree that this is torture.
Waterboarding is easy to condemn. How about this? A 30-second experiment. May I ask Mark the following? Would you be comfortable, for example, with putting a person in the stress position, not for 18 hours, shackling them to the floor, but for a couple of hours, keeping in mind that people who go for basic recruit training.
But you raised that, but now we've seen the pictures from Abu Ghraib, all the stories from the cigarettes in the ears and the waterboarding. I mean, once you do that, is that the problem? You've got the U.S. military saying don't do this.
Everything. It's like saying, you know, because people speed drive 85 and 90 miles an hour and kill other people, you cannot drive 5 miles an hour. Let's use a rule of reason.
Yeah. David Rifkin, Mark Danner, I want to get to Jack Beatty here. Jack, boy, this man is going to be approved, but this debate is a deep one.
It is, you know, and as Talleyrand said about something, it's worse than a crime, it's a blunder. I mean, forget all this haggling about what is or isn't torture. Look at what the rest of the world thinks about this. They saw torture. They know it's going on. It's been documented, even by our own forces. And they have a memo from the president's own counsel saying we need to lower the standard on torture and that you don't have to abide by international law on torture. I can't imagine a graver injury to the United States government and to the U.S., to the American people, than that memo in that context. And yet this man, this blundering man, who's inflicted this propaganda defeat on us of unparalleled proportions, is going to be the Attorney General.
Well, this is not my time to ask questions, but let me just say this. Maybe we can forget all of it for a second. Can we at least agree on some small nucleus of things that all of us are comfortable doing to extract information from unlawful combatants?
I'm not sure we're all going to get comfortable over anything tonight. David Rifkin, we are out of time with that. David Rifkin, partner at Baker & Hostetler in Washington, D.C., thank you very much for being with us tonight. And Mark Danner, staff writer at The New Yorker magazine, thank you for all your reporting for your new book, Torture and Truth. Thanks for being with us tonight from New York. Jack Beatty, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.